Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 657. Technically, I'm on vacation this week. Vacation. I am recording this intro from beyond the grave. Well, Wikipedia said I died a couple days ago. It was changed back, thankfully, unless I'm a computer simulation and I'm a part of a Black Mirror episode that I'm not aware of. But yeah, turns out I am alive. I posted some stuff on my Instagram because there was an information frenzy where the voluntary Wikipedia editors probably were not thrilled. It was a bunch of takedowns per minute of different facts, all of which I posted on my Instagram, some of my favorite ones about me. Turns out I was also eaten by Shia LaBeouf. That was another way that I died, according to Wikipedia, for about a minute. So that's over on Instagram.com/Nerdist. Also, this whole weekend long, April 3rd, 4th, and 5th, Nerdist will be at WonderCon. Geek and Sundry will be there too. We have a bunch of panels that we're doing. I'm doing a Nerdist panel on Sunday at 11 a.m. in the arena. There's a bunch of other podcasts there. Pop My Culture will be there Friday night at 9 p.m. In room 208. There'll be a Nerdist Writers panel and comics panel mashup Saturday night, 7:30, room 208. And a Thrilling Adventure panel Saturday night at 9 p.m., also in room 208. So check those things out. This episode of the podcast is Grace Helbig, someone who I have absolutely adored for years. We first met working at G4. She guest hosted for... I guess we guest hosted an episode together, and I immediately knew, this person is a comedic genius. And, of course, went down the Daily Grace YouTube rabbit hole. And what an unbelievable work ethic, and just an absolute genius. And Grace is doing a new show on E!, The Grace Helbig Show, premiering Friday, April 3rd at 10:30 p.m., which you should absolutely watch. Grace deserves to be as successful as a person. I mean, this whole cluster of you know, Mamrie Hart and Hannah Hart and Grace and Harley Mornstein, just all these people who created their own path and made their own way, I just have so much respect for them. And so it's great to see the traditional side of media now recognizing that too. And I'm honored to be her pal. Besides that, Grace is just a damn nice person. And she always crushes on At Midnight. So this was really fun to have her on the podcast with the hilarious and brilliant and talented Gracie Helbig.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Begun.
No. It was a legit question of, like, I really remember him being in a black shirt, black...
All the jackets blend together, Matt.
What is happening?
Is your show going to be a daily show, Grace?
Weekly.
It's going to be weekly.
Yeah, so I can wear just random.
Although, you know, I guess having done Daily Grace for so long, doing a daily show isn't so daunting.
No, it doesn't say. And also now having like a team, like a like other people that do other things that I don't have to do. Not being like the one that wears all the hats at once.
So you
like,
can just knock stuff out of people's hand and goes, I'll just do it.
Yeah, yeah. I can feel a new form of anxiety that I've never felt before.
Run down to the Abbots which in is the like e-building.
Usurping control to other human beings and trusting people is
that's
new.
Crazy. That's a crazy thing to do. It's good to trust people. It's good to delegate.
Are you shooting that at Wilshire Studios?
Yeah, big
5750.
Time. Yeah, Vinny's there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's really great. God. No, we're shooting, we're renting a house on the east side so that it
looks like
it serves as like this is my home that I live out of, and I keep calling it like introverts late night talk show, where it's like I invite people over to my house and we do stuff and I live my life around them while we talk. I really want it to not be promotional at all for anything that any person that comes on the show is involved in. I really just want it to be like, what would it be like if Jennifer Lawrence had to make spaghetti? Let's do it right here, right now, and see what happens.
We're going to have pretty much the same thing, so we're going to have to cut all that out.
How are you? That's going to be interesting when you're trying to book these people.
Yeah, no, we've already had the conversations where it's like there's definitely a list of, you know, the end-all, be-all, it would be awesome if we got these people, tier. And then there's like B, C, D, E. And I, to be honest, am really excited about the E tier. I'm like, give me the people that like need this and will do anything.
The E tier is just people who were on E at one point.
Yeah,
it's like John Henson.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Wipeout now.
Give me that skunk hair. I want it.
Steve Kometko. You're probably going to want Steve Kometko.
I want Steve Kometko. Where is he?
You're probably going to want Jules Asner. Would be another person.
I loved her.
I want so badly. I just want Bruce Jenner, and I don't want him to be interviewed. I just want him sitting in the background,
just hanging out with an RC copter.
Yeah, like literally taking a load off in the background. That's all I want.
Now, was there any discussion of doing a Daily Show and taking the Chelsea spot?
Sort of, not really. It was kind of this, you know, we pitched to a bunch of different networks. We pitched a show that's basically, you know, my vlog with a budget.
Mm-hmm.
And E was the one that really resonated with it. And they didn't want to do a Daily Show. And also the idea of doing a Daily Show really kind of freaked me out. It was like, how much creative energy can I actually put forth into the universe on a consistent basis like that?
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is to start it like this, see what happens. You know, it's a, like you guys, it's a total learning curve. It's a total experiment of being like, what do people like? What will they watch? What will people like to be a part of?
And you don't always know.
I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. And I've literally watched shows like come and go with, you know, good friends attached to it that I am really not... I don't have any expectations for it. My expectation is I've gotten an opportunity to hire people in my life that I think are really fun to be around and really creatively stimulating and haven't had an opportunity to really express themselves in that way. So that's awesome. And if we can all have a decent time making something, great, total success. If no one watches it, I feel really good about it at the end of the day. If I'm not embarrassed by a piece of content that I'm putting out, total success in my book.
You know, it's funny that, because I'm sure a lot of what you're going to be talking about when you're doing press for the show is, you know, it'll start off with, as a YouTuber, this is like, well, I'm a performer, and that was my medium.
Is that
and
the
still
noun
is-
we're using? YouTuber?
Yeah, YouTuber is like, I guess it's the same way you would say writer.
That's, oh God, fucking, like when, especially throughout the launch of the channel and all, you do all these conferences and people would be like, do you think YouTubers are going to be jumping to, and I'm like, well, they're performers and that's the medium. So, I mean, it's, I think people still have the idea in their head that like, wow, it's amazing that these people who are just kids in their bedrooms in Wisconsin can...
Yeah, so we're literally like monkeys that can play cymbals, and they're like, oh my God, that monkey can play these cymbals? That's amazing.
Does that make people that watch it the YouTubes?
People call them all different things. People call them subscribers, they call them viewers, they call them fans, they call them friends, they call them audience. It's really...
Protein.
All of it is better than VineStar.
for
the record.
Really, really great.
One of the strangest, and I've been to a lot of different conventions.
Whoa.
But nothing was like
VidCon.
VidCon. Oh my gosh.
It's become a really chaotic thing, and I had never been to Comic-Con until this year, and I really in San Diego, and I don't even think I saw Comic-Con. I saw maybe like the crust of Comic-Con, and so
that can be interpreted a lot of different ways.
They love pizza,
not the dirty way, just that people get a little crusty at Comic-Con.
Yeah, you guys gotta use moisturizer. What are you doing?
Well, the problem is you put on
they're using moisturizer, God's moisturizer. Sweat, everyone. Sweat.
Yes, they're using sweat.
But this is my favorite thing about New York Comic Con is that there's no chairs anywhere, and so one of my favorite things was walking through the Javits Center and seeing the hallways of kids just sitting on the floor eating pizza because they were tired of standing, and there are no chairs available for anyone. And I was like, this feels like a huge oversight.
And Javits Center is also like a habit trail.
The airflow in the Javits Center is terrible.
There's none.
So I would like to say, for the record, it smells 55% worse than San Diego Comic Con.
Did we get that on record, Katie?
Katie, this record is now that. Can you read that back?
Someone check the math.
Kyle, would you please get a notary in here so that we can make Matt's comment official? It was very important to him that go on record somewhere.
55%.
But Matt says 55.
The fervor at VidCon is very intense, and I think this new like Vine Star thing is now becoming this like really sensationalized, like girls literally there's another convention called Playlist Live, which I think is actually happening this weekend in Orlando.
Listen to a Spotify playlist
big time. It's really sad and weird to be
this
around.
This one's called My Creative Mix.
Yeah, this one's called Live Journal.
Let's just shake it off again.
15 times in a row. And at Playlist, I remember hearing rumors. I went to it last year. I'm not able to go this year. That they invited Vine stars for the first time last year. Mm-hmm. And there were rumors that like a few people broke their arms or legs because they were trampled, because someone would hear that a Cameron Dallas or a Nash Greer was in the room, and this just concentration of teens would run in a direction, and people were getting hurt because the security wasn't prepared for that. They weren't.
I mean,
and what do you do to a 16-year-old girl?
Nor should they have been
prepared. How do you even prep security for that? Like, okay, you're going to get trampled by 100 puppies. Here's
a list of dudes with high hair.
Now, I don't know if you've been in a locust swarm, but because VidCon, because I did it this year, and it was funny, security, you know, they're like, we're going to give you a security guide just to get through the thing. And I had no problem getting through VidCon.
Oh, same. Yeah,
because it was not like. And then I ended up giving a talk at 9 a.m. in the main thing about how to, you know, follow your dreams and make videos or whatever. And and I was talking to like 9 to 12-year-old girls who had no idea why a grown-ass man was telling them about stuff. And I felt kind of silly.
And then they see a flicker of lavender in the corner and they think it's Tyler Oakley, and they all just scream and run to the corner. It's very strange. And now it's becoming one of those things that you go to and you're like, I have no idea what to expect. I have absolutely no idea.
That's
but
interesting.
It just feels very exciting and fun to be around, you know, like-minded content creators, and to see a lot of people you don't get to see. But at the same time, you're like, the level of crazy, like fanatical energy is just increasing.
It's in like June?
I think it's June this year.
It is June. Yeah, it was June last year, too.
Are you guys going this year?
No, I don't know. We should send, like, Jesse Joyce to be a correspondent for At Midnight to VidCon.
I feel like you guys should hire, like, a charismatic 15-year-old and and send 10 other extras to, like, create chaos around them when they walk around, and like literally people will follow and gather. My book editor was there with me last year, and she just wanted to see, you know.
Yeah.
They were like, we've invested in you making a book because you have this audience. Let's see the audience firsthand. And she had a VIP pass so she could come in the back rooms with me. She said two girls walked up to her and they were like, you have a VIP pass. Who are you?
Oh.
And then they took a photo with her, not caring who she was, just because she had a VIP pass. And to them, that meant, you're important. I should take a photo with you.
A little weird.
So bizarre.
Maybe we should cast an At Midnight tween. basically, and create a and just send someone with high hair.
If
and,
you just have
and
like
he has to wear an At Midnight
someone,
shirt.
Yeah, have recording on their iPhone the whole weekend of this person walking around. Just have like literally three girls start screaming, and it will spread, and it would be hilarious.
It's, that's an easy system to game. I think we can totally
just
do
send
this.
The digital team.
It's so crazy to think that it's so crazy to think that we didn't feel like that long ago. That people were like. What are these new young talents brewing over at YouTube? And now there's an even newer technology with even shorter attention spans and even younger people.
And I will say, it's many of you are very talented.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of...
But there's a big batch
that, aren't.
That I can't fathom in my head.
No, it's... Tell me about it. It's really... I've never felt like... Well, maybe this is not true. I was going to say, I've never felt really like hindered by the idea of someone saying you're a YouTuber, because in my heart, I'm like, I'm trying to make content like the rest of every actor, writer, performer, director, etc. So you can call me whatever you want. At the end of the day, I'm still just trying to create content and put it out into the universe. But now, because YouTuber is like, it's a career path that mm-hmm. kids can go to college and study the digital space and say, I want to be a YouTuber as a job. Like, what does that mean? Because there's a huge spectrum of people that, to their credit, they have built an audience very smartly. Like, they know exactly how to appeal to this audience and what to say and how frequently to interact with them and how to interact with them. But then what happens after that? Like, where is the actual, like, talent?
Think
or...
someone wears Jenna Marbles' skin?
Yeah.
Is that the next evolution?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, I think that it is... reversing the system, which was previously a top-down system where a handful of grown-ass men would say, mm-hmm. you will be the offering that right. America gets to see. And now, because the technology has flipped that upside down, content creators are essentially the ones that get to say, hey, I'm just going to put myself out there. And yeah. so it's not... And then at a certain point, you still, if you want to make the jump to old media, you still have to be picked by a handful of people,
yeah,
which is still an infuriating process. But I feel like in the same way that old media kind of looks at the digital space and they're like, I don't know about these young kids. This seems dumb, but I guess we'll give it a shot because that's where the audience seems to be. It's the same way that, network television, used to look at cable television mm-hmm. and say, oh, cable television, that's all right, we'll see. And, you know, then, well, that's where the best television's getting made is on cable now. And the best television, and a lot of the best content's being made digitally because there are no, there's no bureaucratic system in place to note it to death. It's just, I made a thing, it is now, here is a lens to directly to the audience, the end. I don't know why people are so confounded by this. Like, people want to be entertained. They now have an easy, technologically advanced way to see entertainment fast. What's the... It's not confusing.
You know, fascinating. Like, when we started the Nerdist channel, there was... often I found us sort of like hitting our heads against the wall, Jerry and I, when we were trying to write these videos. So picture Jerry Duggan and I in a room trying to go trying to look at
thank
YouTube
you,
and go,
what is this?
What the fuck are we doing? Like there's no there is no discernible formula for what makes something on YouTube catch.
Well, here
it's interesting because Chester and I have had this conversation a lot recently is that and he
your boyfriend
it,
Chester the Molester.
Just the shadowy.
The poor guy. No, wait, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you.
It's just the only name that anyone ever says after Chester. I'm sorry. I'm sure you've heard it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Growing up with the last name that I had,
Hard
and
dick.
Then when people manipulate it, and then you're like, and then they say it to you like they're the first ones to think of it.
Like
and you're
never.
Like, I know. I've lived with it my entire life. Chester, you don't. I'm so sorry.
So you were saying. We're saying that there's this like dichotomy of a community builder and content creator. And there's a lot of kids that you would say on paper, you can't actually like discern, are they a comedian? Are they a musician? Are they a storyteller? What are they? They're a community builder. They have all of these followers. They reach out to them. They maintain this like ecosystem of their own world. And And then there are content creators that the people that I sincerely think are very talented. It's the musicians, the comedians, the people that write sketches, that, you know, the videos like hook in and sink in, and they're making content that is shareable. Mm-hmm. You don't have to consider yourself like, I am a representative of this person. I wear all their merch. That's like a community builder. Mm-hmm. That's someone that does that. So it is, because there's this like weird dual system that's happening. It's impossible to go into the space now and be like, here's exactly what you need to do to succeed.
Yeah. Well, I will say that I think there's a couple, you know, I've always said that, you know, television has to just be watchable so people don't turn it away, turn it off. And digital content has to be shareable because it's a crowdsourced platform.
Yeah.
And so it's the only, people don't consume it the way they consume television. Right. So it's not, you know, particularly a lot of the early stuff on the Nerdist channel, we were essentially making TV content for the internet, which isn't really how it works. But as nearly as I can figure, a couple of ways, and these are just like broad philosophical ideas about like what content works on YouTube's. Consistency helps a lot. Like you having a daily show and being funny every day.
Yeah.
That helps a lot. The other thing is I would often think videos that catch tend to be videos of, you know, some superlative quality, the most this, the craziest that, the best X.
Yeah, it's very BuzzFeed, where it's like,
very much so,
here are five types of people that you interact with at a grocery store. Like, it's just trying to create
BuzzFeed,
relatable.
The worst.
His girlfriend's the editor for BuzzFeed.
I just sat down. I just saw their new studio space. Zay Frank?
Oh, yeah.
What a guy. What a name.
But I think part of that is driven by the way that they, because at one point, a human being would curate, you know, which videos to put on the homepage of YouTube, and the YouTube homepage was an incredibly, you know, to this day, it's something that it's still like, I still kind of pound my fist and be like, why did they do away with that? You know, and then they did the whole like personalized page for people,
right?
Which is good for users, but I feel like wasn't necessarily great for content creators because, you know, Google essentially took YouTube and then made it this, you know, like we must bow to the holy grail of the algorithm, and then made the content sharing all algorithmic. And so you do kind of have to, like, what can you say in a title that in a thumbnail that's going to make someone click on it, right? Or what related content?
They have insane psychological studies of colors that are more appealing to people in a font on a thumbnail that will make them click over.
Also cleavage.
Also, yeah, tits for days. I mean, that's all I click on. Yeah. It's like, oh, you went to the zoo, but there's tits in the thumbnail. Let's see what happens.
Red ostrich got some sweet tits.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's totally changed the way that, I mean, you know, and the way that the algorithm constantly changes. Mm-hmm. I think YouTube has definitely become more of a platform for users rather than the content creators. And I feel like the content creators are constantly trying to chase the little morsels of audience they can get.
It's insane. It's so saturated right now that to stand out in the YouTube space, if I was a, you know, 22-year-old person trying to make comedy content on YouTube, I would be riddled with anxiety of how to do it. It's so insane. There's no way to do it. There are ways to do it. And now there's so much that is put into this community building, this engaging with your audience, almost like Trump's actual content, which is like insane. It's insane. But that's the kids that are growing up. They're not a TV experienced audience. They don't know how to consume content in that way. They've never had to.
They don't have to wait for things. Yeah. They don't have to pay attention to things.
No, everything is interactive. Everything is personal. Everything is directed to them and at them. And they can look up any person on Twitter, on Instagram, on anything. That if you're like, hey, just watch this TV show, but like none of the people involved are on social media, that's so unappealing to like a teenager, where it's like, I want to have this like weird voyeurism where I can find out everything I want to about this person.
Yeah.
Which is, it's just, yeah, it's strange. What's going to happen in the future? I have no idea. And it kind of terrifies me.
Yeah.
I am so happy, and I've had this conversation a lot recently with people my age, that I, at one point, didn't have the internet and didn't have a cell phone, that I had life where I had to, like, call, collect to get my parents to pick me up after a movie. Yeah. Like, I am so thankful to have...
10-10-220, guys. That was what you would dial to go collect an AT&T.
Oh, but David Spade was bumming those commercials went away, too.
10-10-220!
10-10-220. I'd completely forgotten about that.
Me. That's how I dialed. Sometimes I would dial. This is how lazy and fat I was as a child. I would call my mother from the store at the top of our street to come pick me up.
Oh, man. Because
our mile, it was like the street was like, it was like a mile long, which in retrospect is hilarious that I would do it. And the crazy part is occasionally she would come. Not all the time. A lot of times she'd be like, Matthew, just fucking walk down the street.
Great mom. Yeah, I know. I remember calling Collect and it was like, state your name. It was like, mom, pick me up. And then you just hang up the phone and then you stand outside the movie theater hoping and praying that your mom's going to pick you up.
That's gaming the system.
That's crazy. Like, no, kids will never know that idea of using a map and being like, I have no clue where I am.
I wonder if you asked a group of, I don't know, 12-year-olds what collect calling was, if they'd have any guess.
Should we make a video where... Well, I guess there are some things that, you know, there's enough retro in our culture. Like, if you showed a kid a cassette tape, they'd be like, oh, the thing from Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, they would know.
But
it's to the point where literally they made those iPhone hand receivers that literally you plug into your iPhone and you can, like,
talk. They have the curly
like
wire. They sell at Urban Outfitters next to the record players.
And the Polaroid cameras. Yeah. What is happening?
So weird.
Let's go to the clunky technology section of Urban Outfitter.
You can buy some roller skates and some suspenders go to town.
There was a and I'll drive up in my Crankstart jalopy. There's a reason the technology moved on from these things.
Don't tell Jay Leno. He's still got that steam-powered car.
He's it.
Yeah, it looks like the front of a train. Yeah.
You got a shovel coal in the front of it. What's the problem?
Jay's garage. Welcome to Jay's garage. I'm Jay.
Yeah, we do. Got one of these. Got a car phone. It's
only made four of these Ferraris. I have three of them.
Go on.
Well, you see, Corolla bought the other one.
We had a conversation about it, and it turns out the holes in our souls still aren't filled yet.
You guys have been working on that.
Denim shirts.
Denim shirts. That's what they have in common.
Yep.
Denim shirts. By the way, is anyone wearing a denim shirt here? Guys, no more denim shirts.
Why?
I don't know. There's just something about denim and chambray. It just feels 90s. I worked at the Gap when I was in college for a week.
Wait. Put us back there. What was the Gap like in the early 90s?
I remember wanting to work at the Gap.
No, you don't.
Well, no.
Trust me.
I thought it was like the coolest thing to work at the Gap.
It's fold and fold and fold, and some asshole comes in and they want the pair of shorts that's number 6 in the pile, and so they rip it out and you got to refold all that shit again.
Well, let me ask you the following question now. Now that you've had that experience in your life,
yes.
All right, when you go into a store.
Yeah, I was going to ask, do you feel
like... Do you refold?
I always refold.
Me too.
I always refold. Yeah. And that's a lot of times not fold quality, but I do my best.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you can really do in life.
Put the effort forth.
I used to wait tables all the time, and now when I go to a restaurant, I am like overly sensitive to
you
the
sit
server.
Down. I'll bring you something.
Yeah. Do you need Diet Coke? Okay, yeah, got
do you,
it.
Do you stack the plates?
Yeah, I bust everything. Yeah. I put it all as neat as possible as I can. Yeah, it's a...
My girlfriend, Dory, she... I never really worked in a retail environment because she just, like, she worked in her uncle's candy store and then ended up going to college for 30 years and getting 50 degrees from all these universities.
She worked in her uncle's candy store?
Her uncle's candy store in the Prudential Center in Boston.
What?
Yeah. We were out, like, early on in the relationship, we would go out to a store and she would, like, take something and then, like, not want to get it and then, like, just put it back wherever. And I was like,
No!
You can't do that! You're a retail! And then I would just take everything and just find the... I was like, what aisle is this? And I'd put it back. I would just freak out like, I can't... No!
Yeah.
So in the early 90s, what was being sold at the Gap, first of all, pleated jorts.
That sounds like a great band name.
Pleated
shorts? Yeah. Jean shorts that had pleats in them.
Wow. That's even... Not even Kevin Smith wears those.
You just can't see because he's got the hockey jersey on.
That's true. Kev, you couldn't please. I don't know, Kev.
Send your hashtags pleated jorts. Yes. There was also shirts with polo shirts with paisley all over them. Paisley pattern polo shirts. Not Brad Paisley.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This is a pre-Brad Paisley world.
He was huge in the Gap in the early 90s.
Paisley, by the way, is named after. Do you know where Paisley comes from?
Tell me.
I'll tell you, and I only know this because of watching Bargain Hunt. It comes from a town, Paisley, Scotland, which is where that pattern was invented.
Because someone just puked and they were like,
there it is.
Oh,
this is great. Paisley.
This pattern.
Now, thinking about what Paisley was, I think it's like more someone jacked off on something.
Yeah, it's just like perfect drips.
Yeah, yeah. It's just basically, it's just a woven sperm pattern.
Kate Spade is now Paisley, take Paisley polo shorts.
Yeah. I mean, no. Shirts.
Polo shirts. Of course, a lot of collegiate looking button downs, but it was the early 90s, and so the shoulders were off where your normal shoulder would be. That. Like they were bigger.
Sure.
Because bigger clothes were.
Because everyone wanted to look like they're wearing their dad's clothes.
That's right.
Yeah.
And what else?
Khakis?
Khakis. A lot of khakis in different, you know, there's regular khaki and then like olive tones.
What year is this?
91.
91, and this has got to be in Los Angeles, right?
It was in Westwood.
Oh, the Westwood Gap.
Yeah, I went to UCLA.
Wow.
Yeah, there was a Birkenstock store.
You know, Mosier worked at a Banana Republic. Was there a Banana Republic near there? Because I feel like he went to, like, in L.A. He also, like, when he came out to L.A. to go to film school, he would, like, had this miserable job at the Banana Republic, and he just hated talking to people so much that folding.
Oh.
That they just threw him in the back and all day he would just fold.
Just
fold,
like a fold monkey?
Did you guys both work at the Gap and Banana Republic unknown to each other? Miserably folding.
I wish you had like past each other because then how would that happen?
Like,
years
Romeo
later I would do podcasts.
Our podcasts are kind of the Gap and Banana Republic of podcasts.
Are we saying that Phoebe is a Banana Republic? Thank you.
Oh, it is. It went upscale. Yeah. Banana Republic was not upscale in those days.
What?
Really?
No.
We don't even know a time.
Banana Republic.
Sit back and let Grandpa tell you stories about Banana Republic.
I worked at TJ Maxx for a month.
Did you get the Max for the minimum price?
I worked at TJ Maxx. When you work there, they put you in the fitting room is the first thing. And you see firsthand so many middle-aged women stealing clothing underneath of their clothing constantly.
Wait a second. Why would they have to steal? The prices are already so great.
It was like dream job. This is the store I love. I have arrived. And then they put me in the fitting room, literally just watched all these women like walk in with five items of clothing, come out with one. 15-year-old, super passive, super shy Grace Helbig was just like, okay, like just watching them.
Have a
and
nice
then,
day.
Yeah, then Chili's offered me 50 cents more an hour, and I was like, see you, assholes.
And those same middle-aged women were stuffing wings under their dresses and leaving.
And I was like, see ya. It was really, really great.
You're just saying you want your baby back, out as you walked out the door.
Yeah. Just putting molten chocolate cakes in their purses. And I was like, I can do nothing.
I read it the other day. I saw this real sad picture. Someone had gotten takeout from TGI Fridays and like they got
That's
dessert, which was the Oreo sundae, and they opened up the container and it was just a bagged Oreo cookie sandwich. That's what they're selling you for $12.
Yeah,
guys,
they are.
Unlimited apps. Not around anymore.
Now, if you were a 17-year-old girl and you dropped a baby in the toilet at Chili's, would you regret it, come back 2 years later and say, I want my baby back?
Oh, my God.
Was that a long way to go? I feel like that was a long road.
It was a lot of pipe to lay, but I feel like you nailed it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tweet, continued tweet.
Yeah. One of three. So what do you do here? I'm a teenager.
Thank God for tweet longer. I can really slide these bits in. Or I'll just write the bit. I'll type the bit out, take a picture of it, and put it on Instagram.
Has a tweet longer ever been retweeted?
By the way, I am slightly annoyed by the use of text images on Instagram where people like,
take a photo of something.
They take a photo of their, like, they write a joke and then take a photo of it and put it on Instagram. I feel like that's shortcutting.
Alton Brown, get over yourself. I don't need to see your damn post-its.
Wow, really, the gloves have come off.
Guy with his Post-its, just write it. Don't put a Post-it on your computer and take a picture. It's just lazy.
Don't get upset. Post-it molested Matt when he was a child.
You don't know what happened at the top of that street.
The Post-it offered Matt a ride home, and it took a little bit longer.
I guess my mom's not coming. I can come.
Matt hasn't been in a Staples for years.
I used to work at a Staples.
You did?
Really?
Yes. Well, that explains your hatred for Post-its.
I ran the furniture department at Chelmsford Staples in Massachusetts.
Oh my God.
So I was like,
you were like, so what will you tell us about these desk chairs that we're sitting in?
Here's
right
the crazy part. So I'd have to put together all the floor models, and then they do the whole bullshit of like, if you want it put together, they charge you whatever, and they'll put it together.
Sure.
So it's just me putting it together. And then they had us like try to upsell everyone these those plastic carpet roll protector things.
Right. Oh,
those
I had mats. One for a very short period of
time.
Yeah,
it's like these things
awful.
That will crack and look worse than any holes your fucking chair would put in the carpet. Yeah. But it got to a point where I could put together one of these office chairs in less than a minute.
Oh, wow.
With a drill.
That sounds like
it
a threat.
It was pretty impressive.
What do you do with this skill set like that?
Actually, you know what's funny is I bought an office chair for $30. When I moved to LA, I had like no money, and I bought an office chair for like $30. And I'm like, you know what? Someday, man, you're going to get a real nice office chair. And I still have the office chair. It's
really?
Still the one I use at my desk. And it was like falling apart. And Dory's like, you should just buy a new chair. I'm like, I can fix this. And I like fucking tightened everything. And I was like, look. And the reason I like it is because it has no arms. So if I want to play guitar in the chair, it's not. I don't have to like.
Oh my God, what a sentence.
Well, and then in broader terms, it proves to Dory that no matter what she does, you will never leave the relationship.
I can fix this!
Matt, it's broken.
Give me a drill, Dory. I'll
Matt,
fix it.
Matt, we're a Robley $30 chair.
No!
Take off your arms, Dory.
You take off your arms, I can play guitar on you.
We must make love on this plastic flooring. To save the carpet!
Oh, guys, we've had a lot of terrible jobs.
Yeah.
What else did you do before YouTube?
Good line of questioning.
I've waited tables at like every chain restaurant. I've worked at Chili's, and then I was a hostess at Chili's because I was too young to serve alcohol. And it was when Chili's still had a smoking section, which I remember so vividly.
Where was this?
In South Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah, and then when I went to college in North Jersey, I started waiting tables at Chili's because I had turned 18. Then I went on to work at an Applebee's up there. I worked at an Applebee's in South Jersey. Then I worked at a Dave and Buster's in Philadelphia. I worked at an Olive Garden.
They're all shades of the same place.
Oh, yeah. There's the same person goes to all of them, and the same people are making your food, and it's the same, you know, results on your bowels. It's really not a good scenario. But
is there one of the, like, would you say there's one... Of all of the places you've worked at, is there one where you're like, you know what, I'm not going to eat there, even as a joke?
Oh, I mean, I have very low standards for food, so
they're all game.
Yeah, they're all fine. I remember when I worked at Applebee's in South Jersey, it was when they got their Weight Watchers menu, and so because everything is like calorie counted and portion controlled, it's all delivered to the kitchen in plastic bags. So it was the least amount of kitchen touching happening to the food. Mm. So all of the staff would order the Weight Watchers menu because they knew that it wasn't. Kidding. It was literally like putting plastic bags of chicken in a microwave and putting it on a plate.
Oh, food condoms. Yeah. They came with food condoms.
Yeah, and so we were all like, this is safe. All of us on our break just eating like pico de gallo and chicken. And, like,
how do you feel? Are you sick yet? Are you okay?
Yeah,
how do you feel? Keep an eye on me.
So ridiculous. But
if I pass out, call my mom and then say, hey, pick me up and then hang up.
Yeah, exactly. I will say the place that I did not enjoy working the most was Dave and Buster's. Because
you hate fun?
I hate fun. I hate adults having fun. They were awful at training. They gave us a 5-day training program, but really didn't teach us anything. And I was in college, and I did track a bunch when I was in high school. And my high school track coach worked at Dave and Buster's on the weekend and ended up getting me the job over the summer. And then I found out that she was the bitch of the restaurant that everyone hated. And so I was like, I'm already here on bad terms. Didn't know what I was doing. And then the other added bonus was that all of the cooks in the kitchen were rehabilitated criminals that were getting like you know, quote unquote work study.
It's a nice program.
Yeah, super fun. Lots of, you know, things happening all at once. And so I used to drive my stepdad's truck over from New Jersey to Philadelphia every day. And then there was a security guard that would walk me to my stepdad's truck after my shift every night because they didn't, you know, it's a, I guess, dangerous work environment. But adults that want ribs and want to play video games are very intense, and I didn't know until working there. I worked there for a month and then I quit. It's the only job I've ever like called and quit, and literally called from a Target parking lot crying with my mom like rubbing my back being like, you can do it.
How it bad was, what like how like how so?
How so what?
How so are people aggressive when they want ribs in video games?
Think about Chuck E. Cheese children and then grow them.
Yeah, give them credit cards. it was because they would have these different tiers of things where you can get ribs and mashed potatoes and 20 credits in the arcade for $16.99. And it was this insane computer system that they didn't teach us of like having to go in and do all these special things. And people, when they didn't get it, because a lot of people that went to Dave and Buster's were regulars. Like they have gone there, you know, they know their system. They know exactly what they want. And they also all get drunk at the bar first and then they come sit down. And so it's like they're ready to go. And you're like, I don't know. I have to get this fixed. And it was also in Philadelphia. So it's like people that just don't give a shit about you being a human being. That
oh, Grace, it was in Philadelphia. They were drunk before they got to the bar.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they drove themselves there. It was great. It was just like people being so mean. And this is 19, 20-year-old Grace Helbig, who's still like shy and doesn't understand the world, has already seen women steal so much from TJ Maxx and didn't understand why that was happening. And then these people are just being mean when all you're trying to do is like feed them and give
them. I'm trying to get these ribs to do as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I'm not cooking anything. I'm literally just trying my best. And just, yeah, you just see a side of human beings that is so confusing to me.
Yeah.
You'd have to pay me so much money to be mean to someone. Like, yeah. I have seen people be mean.
I'm going
to
let an inmate jizz on your ribs. Yeah. In the same way that you can't go to Chuck E. Cheese unless you have a kid. It's the same rule should be for Dave and Buster's, just to try to control.
Yeah,
the writers of At Midnight, we all went for lunch on a Thursday.
It's super fun. I have now gone as an adult, you know, I've had enough time away from my experience there that I have gone back and it's super fun.
I will say this, Dave and or Buster, whichever of you is listening to the podcast, I'm sure you're fans. Dave and Buster's is kind of an amazing place because not only can you just eat the shittiest food.
Yeah.
And drink the drinkiest colored booze.
Yeah.
But you could literally go, like, we went on a work break and I just fucking was just shooting hoops the whole break.
Yeah.
Just playing the basketball game, getting tickets for God knows what. I'm not gonna.
Yeah, I went as an adult and got enough tickets that we bought the game of Simon when we were done.
Nice.
In the arcade.
Wow.
Yeah. So more
games.
That's
a lot of tickets.
Yeah, it was. And a kid came up to us at like 11 o'clock on a Thursday and was like, it's my birthday. Can I have some tickets? And I have never before in my life been so straightforward with a child. I was like, no, you cannot. We have earned these. It was this gypsy kid that came up asking for them. But other than that, it was a really great
time.
There
has not been a kid here in 30 years.
What?
Ghost kid.
Yeah, just Grace yelling at Frogger in the corner, thinking it's a child.
The legend of the ticket child.
I think it's now, as you know, not working there, I think it's a great place for adults to hang out because it gives you activities to do.
Yeah.
So it's not just sitting around only having
conversations. Or on your phone.
Yes.
That's the beauty of it. And the thing, too, like, they just opened, I don't know if you've seen it, but they have just opened the world's largest Dave & Buster's at Hollywood and Highland.
I haven't seen it.
I recommend everyone goes. Because all the iPhone games you love are now giant. That's what an arcade is now.
Yeah,
it's just giant Fruit Ninja.
It's the closest I'll ever get to, like, being on The Price is Right.
Yes, the giant wheel is there for the tickets.
I'm going to tell you the closest you'll ever get to being on Price is Right.
Is actually being on The Price is
Right. Well, You come to Talking Dead some Sunday.
Oh, I heard this. I was just talking to someone about this, and they said you guys shoot in the same studios.
We're one floor above on dinner breaks. They leave the fucking wheel just out.
But someone told me the wheel is locked when it's
bullshit.
Not
it is unlocked.
No. I've been told lies. Oh, my God.
And as I've said many times before, The only jarring thing about... There's two jarring things about the wheel.
Okay.
Number one, it's a lot heavier than you think it's going to be.
I assume it is.
And it doesn't make the noise. Like, when you spin
the
wheel,
the noise
you will find yourself going... So without that, it basically is just like a large, you just hear just metal grinding.
It's an unsettling noise.
It is.
Oh,
it's a very unsettling.
Well, let me ask.
That is a bummer.
I only just recently hit $1 for the first time.
Shit.
Yeah.
Did
but
when,
last time I did, the last time I did the Bill Maher show, because he shoots in the Price is Right stage, or one over from the Price is Right stage.
Sure.
And so I spun it, and I'm like, I never hit $1, and I hit $1. I was so, I don't know if I've ever been happier.
I bet there are crew guys there that can hit $1 anytime they fucking want to.
Oh, absolutely.
That know how that wheel works.
Yeah.
And just, if I go up 3 and then come down at this speed, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Does it plug in and light up? Does that ever happen?
It's not a...
So it's literally just the sound guy in the booth. Making the butt beep 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 noises?
I guess so. It's some guy's job to go like.
No.
I hope he's doing it with his mouth.
It's actually that's what Michael Winslow is doing.
And then
now.
When he dies, his son's gonna take it over.
Yeah. He also wears a bedazzled blazer for some reason.
Oh, Roddy died of breast cancer. What a way for a guy to go.
But I love.
Let's do a sad one.
I will say, I think Drew Carey has gotten a lot better at hosting that show. The very first few episodes or weeks of episodes I felt were one of the most awkward experiences watching that
show. You're just missing Bob. That's the problem, you know?
Well,
Drew's been doing it so long, you're like, okay.
Well, it was because you really have to know how to console someone when something bad happens. And I remember the most awkward moments were like a woman would miss out on a car and he'd be like, didn't win. We'll be back after this commercial break. And literally she's standing there.
Add this to the checklist of things that don't work out in your life. We'll be right back.
Except for that airbrush t-shirt. Nailed that.
Mean game show host.
But let's be honest, Sheila. Is that Broyhill dining set really going to change your life that much? It's not going to bring him back.
No, but I thought I could get the cash equivalent.
No. No.
Oh. We had on Nerdist, the second season of Nerdist on BBC America, our finance guy was obsessed with The Price is Right and game shows. You remember this?
All game shows? Or?
Like all game shows, but okay. Was so obsessed with The Price is Right. Like we would talk about games because we would try to do games in Nerdist. And he would always be consulting on the games, and I'd be like, "What? Why do you know the mechanism of this? Like, why?" He's like, "I'm a huge Price is Right fan." And then we unearthed the clip of him on The Price is Right.
No,
and he was up until very recently the most winning Price is Right contestant.
Really?
Yes, Jade was his name. Remember Jade, finance guy?
Yes, yes.
But anyways, he fucking
spun it
and like. Got the showcase. He missed getting both showcases by like $9. Like, it was insane. It was insane.
So did he game the system like the Press Your Luck guy?
No, he just was so good if you watch enough fucking Price is Right, you'll know how much Crest toothpaste costs.
Yeah.
$3.02. I know.
Very grocery inflated from actual.
Yeah, it's manufacturer suggested retail price.
But that's
so you gotta go MSRP. You gotta go MSRP. MSRP, manufacturer suggested retail price is what they're using here, okay?
I just like watching people bid in the, what is it called? The four people that bid before they get up to the stage.
Oh, yeah, I don't even know what that's called, but that's
like,
fantastic.
Whatever it is. But yeah, I saw a clip recently. I think I was doing something for The Soup, and they showcased this, that it was like a hot tub or something, and the guy was like, $9,000. <Yeah. laughs> Or it was like a lawnmower.
No, wasn't it like an iPhone?
Yeah,
remember?
Something ridiculous.
It was an iPhone 6 Plus, and the guy goes like, $8,000. And then the next guy goes, $8,001.
I know how this game is played.
It was so dumb.
I think they should put... I think Price is Right would be really funny if they just populated it with super rich people who don't understand basic consumer, like that level of consumerism.
And here from the Carnegie family.
Yeah, guess the price of this Prius.
A baby?
Yeah, it's my favorite when people's excitement just like shuts down all of their ability to reason or like any rationale that they have.
The best is, like, if you go on and watch the clip of Aaron Paul on The Price is Right, because he was a contestant of The Price is Right. If you look at the YouTube comments, it's all people accusing The Price is Right of now being fake because this actor was on.
Oh, my God.
Like, oh, that's casting. He's totally acting. This didn't happen.
Apparently, they all have, like, all of the audience has a, like, 30-second interview.
Yeah, they have a questionnaire thing before they go.
Yeah, to figure out their personalities, to see, like, who's going to be the most dynamic. I remember iJustine, who's another YouTuber, like, 5 years ago, she was on Price is Right, and she, like, made a video of it, and she won, you know, her showcase, like, got all the way there, won her showcase, won an Apple computer, and that's when I was like, I don't know how much I believe in this show anymore. This girl who loves Steve Jobs openly in all of her videos and talks about, like, waiting in line to get the new iPhone, just happened to go on The Price is Right and win the showcase and win an Apple computer.
Well, you know, sometimes dreams come true.
You know, I'm a pessimist. I hate everything. Life sucks.
Justine Sweet, I used to see her at the Apple announcements.
Yeah.
Yeah, whenever... What? Why are you looking at me like
that? She got invited to these things?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She was huge. Like, she would go dance. Like, she got really big. She got a bunch of viral videos because she would go dance in Apple stores. Like, she would put on, like, photo booth movie.
I could not stand those fucking people. I worked in an Apple store for 4 years.
Where? Here?
The Grove.
In the Grove.
At the Grove. I worked at the Apple store at the Grove. R050, that's our store number.
Okay.
The 50th Apple store opened.
Whoa.
R001, which is the first Apple store opened, is in Glendale.
Ah, still no one cares.
All right. but it was just, there were people that would constantly be coming in.
And dancing.
Either dancing, shooting videos, taking, what I would do all the time, people would start chatting on Messenger.
AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah, but it was like AOL Instant Messenger. And what I would do all the time is come out of the closet to whoever they were last talking to. Seriously.
Because they would leave their names
on? Because they'd
leave it
open. Oh. And I'd be like, hey, man, listen.
That's amazing.
I would lure them into a thing, and I was just bored. I'd be like, I got to tell you something, man.
That's incredible.
Occasionally people were like, dude. I know. Like, three times.
Yeah, the song lyrics in your profile are like, super sad.
And it was just like this thing I would do, and I would randomly, like, message people on their play thing going like, I gotta tell you, I really like you. Like,
God.
So I don't know what the fuck happened to these people, but don't fucking go on the Apple store's computers and leave your name.
Well, it worked for iJustine, and it was fine because it was...
Didn't work for me. I worked there, and I never got to go to an event.
Yeah, well, you know, Apple stopped inviting G4, period.
Yeah.
Like, really? G4, which was... Attack of the Show was pretty much for the only show on television that was talking about the things that it was talking about.
Right.
And I don't know what happened, but I remember I went, like, 1 year, and then the next year... And I didn't do anything crazy.
Yeah.
I saw Steve Jobs, because he would talk... And then I was like third row jobs. And then afterwards, he'd kind of walk back to the area where, you know, like all the devices were there to play with. And I turned around and he was standing right there. We made eye contact for a second, and it was after the presentation. And the only thing I could think to say, because I was so nervous, was, hey, man, pretty good job up there.
Like, oh, that's... my God.
And then he was just like, thanks, and then just kept walking. I didn't know what else to say. I'm so embarrassed.
At least you didn't say pretty good jobs up there.
I should have. That would have at least had a joke in it. Pretty good job up there.
Oh, my God.
Announcing the iPad. It was the iPad announcement.
He cut me for sushi. I've told that story before. But yeah, I went up when I was up at Apple Corporate. I was up at Apple Corporate, and we were, because I did like a few weeks of training up there. Mm-hmm. And we'd go into Cafe Max, which is the on-campus... thing.
Say by the bell.
Yeah, I'm like trying to figure out where to eat, and like, oh, you've got all these foods of the world essentially there, and they're all really good, and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll get some sushi. Yeah, I get some sushi, and I turned it to and then all of a sudden I'm like, this asshole's in front of me, and I go, oh, because I look, I just see a black shirt, and I look down at the jeans, I'm like, fine.
and then
we went to like pay, and I'm like across from him when he's paying. And I was like, I want to look inside this guy's fucking wallet to see what's going on there. So, like, he's just, like, talking to the cashier person, and I'm just staring in his wallet, like, fucking, like, darting my eyes into it. Like, I made a mental note. I know what's in his wallet, what was in his wallet. He had a Bank of America debit card. He had a Starbucks gift card.
Oh.
And he had a platinum Amex.
Here's Steve Jobs. Here's a gift card for Starbucks.
Yes!
Like $25.
Who gave him that? And then he goes to pull out cash. And then, like, as he's pulling out the cash, he catches me looking at his wallet and just goes,
oh, my God.
Huh. And he paid for yours too?
No, that's not what happened, but the man paid cash at his own company.
I thought you said he paid for your sushi.
No, he cut me in line for sushi.
Oh, he cut you in line. Oh, I thought
I was next in line for that fucking California roll.
Ugh.
And that bitch gets in there.
So you guys have had equally disappointing actions with Steve Jobs.
Neither of us rose to the occasion.
Disappointing stories with titans. Yep, that's pretty much.
Yeah, that sounds really great.
One time I said, how's it hanging to the president? Like, there's just so many.
Did you?
No, but that would be a story that would be in Disappointing Encounters with Titans.
Yeah, true.
Disappointing Encounters with the Titans.
So, have you started the show at this point?
Not yet. We start mid-March, and the show is supposed to actually air starting in April, the first week of April.
Oh, that's cool.
Who's your showrunner?
Well, right now it's kind of like this, it's a small team, so it's like amalgamation of people that are wearing various hats. Mm-hmm. So like everyone has job titles, but Blake Webster is the name of the director that we hired, and he just did the Arsenio reboot. And
it wasn't a terrible program.
Well, no, he was, and he has, you know, hilarious stories from it, which have already made me laugh, and I just heard, you know, 2% of them. And he's very much my kind of personality, where it's literally like the philosophy is like no dicks, like just no egocentric people around would be the most creative environment to exist in for me. And he also feels that way, so it's a good match. Yeah, it feels really good.
The people are really nice. Like they're
super nice. And one of the execs was telling me that you used to have a desk outside of her office and would just randomly pitch bizarre shows that you would think of just off the top of your head.
Yeah
you'd be like, shark selling real estate.
I did do that because there was no more room on the G4 side of the building, and it was all sort of blended together. It was an open floor plan.
Yeah, she was telling me, she's like, literally weirdly, like Chris Hardwick had a cubicle desk outside of my office, and every time I would leave, he'd be like, here's a new show idea.
Yeah. It's called the Ant Farm. Like, I would just come up with any...
It's a bunch of single ants looking for love.
50 I'll host single it. Ants. Yeah.
50 million single ants. We're going to narrow them down to one queen.
Can live three times their body weight.
Well, because I would hear a lot of really bad pitches coming from those offices. Like,
I'm sure.
Like, really bad. And some of them were like, weirdly offensive. Like, I heard these guys pitching a show where they go, they're like, and then one of the cast members is like a sassy black lady, but not like a sassy black lady from Detroit. We've seen that. This is a different kind of sassy, like word for word. These just like gross white guys, these gross doughy. Yeah.
Yeah, this like, is, I understand America and how the world works.
Yeah, America's seen the Detroit sassy black lady. And first of all, like, what are you talking? I mean, it was hard not to break in and go, I'm going to call this one for you guys. Get out.
Did you ever hear a pitch that didn't get made that you were like, that's gold?
No.
Really? Well,
I think a lot of the gold gets made.
Yeah, big time.
And then the rest of time in LA is general meetings with bullshit.
Well, my favorite, when I first, like years ago is when I first started kind of pitching my own show around. And I remember an executive telling me, this is stuck with me forever. I don't know if it's true. I really sincerely hope it's true. That the best thing that they had ever gotten pitched was Mariah Carey pitched an idea for a reality television show about her life. But the only cameras were on the collars of her dogs. And so it was three like GoPros, and the only footage you saw in the entire reality show was from the dog's collar cam. So it's literally just like her feet for 22 minutes.
Oh.
And I was like, I would watch one episode of that and see what happened.
That is a really bad idea.
Who knows if it actually happened, but I just sincerely love the thought of Mariah Carey sitting down and authentically being like, this is something I'm really proud of. I've had this idea.
And then she forgets the cameras on the collars and then breaks out the peanut butter.
Oh, shit hits the fan, literally.
Christopher.
What? What? That could mean anything.
You're saying she puts the peanut butter on Nick Cannon's dick.
Yes.
So she doesn't have to do it.
Yeah, it's that's a bad show.
Could be great.
But I think you, and I said this when I saw the announcement, I said I think you'll rule that channel because that channel...
I mean, but like Bruce Jenner is ruling that channel, to be fair.
Yeah, but what that channel desperately needs is you and people who are going to watch you because their audience is, right now, is just, you think of the E! Audience and it's like, older women, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm interested to see what happens because obviously my demo is a young demographic, and there some of them are watching E, a lot of them are not, and E has a very solid older female audience, and so it's going to be this interesting kind of hybrid. I hope that happens. I have no idea. I mean, the greatest note that came back from, you know, testing the pilot, which is the most terrifying thing to hear, that it's my future of a television show is in the hands of a stranger in Chicago watching this in like a tiny room.
If you're lucky,
room.
Chicago.
Right. I know. Yeah. Some suburb of Detroit that's like...
We've seen that sassy person watching that show.
Yeah. We've seen a sassy white middle class South Jerseyan before. But... the feedback they said was that I felt like a real person. And that I was like,
nice.
That warmed my That's real amazing. Human heart.
Well, you know, going back to the early days of E, I think maybe it was Jules Asner or someone at some point started the thing on E where they talk like this.
It's a weird...
Everything is presented in this fashion.
It's the most bizarre dialect. And I one time turned down an audition for an E, like, talking head pop culture show thing because I had heard that, yeah, you have to speak in this cadence. And I can't do it. I can't do... accents. I can't do any sort of like weird cadence. And when you watch the network, you're like, they all do it. They all have
because it's, I think it's a way to communicate to mouth breathers how they're supposed to feel at different times of the sentence without having to confuse them with words.
Yeah, very obvious.
That you could just go la 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 la, and the mouth breathers would go like they would get they would still watch.
Yeah, they understand that someone's having a baby.
And but also, like, if you're just a heads up, if you're walking around the E building,
uh-huh,
and you think you see a scary skeleton, it's just Juliana Rancic.
She's
very thin.
She is.
She is very thin.
Well,
guys, I just wanted to bring that up.
I'm glad.
Here's a non sequitur Matt does.
Oh, no, now we know that. And
someone
the
give
Apple
her some
store numbers.
Pleated jorts. That'll fill her out.
But I think it's.
She's just the next time we see her, she's in a full pleated jort.
I mean, I really
one
feel
leg
like,
of a pleated jort.
I feel like that's going to be Kanye's new thing. He's got to bring something back.
I feel like there's an opportunity there because I think when E gets a hold of the right comic personality,
mm-hmm,
The Soup was huge for Joel, and you know, obviously Chelsea's show was huge for her. But but I think, you know, you'll bring a lot of substance. I think people
maybe
want that there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we'll bring substance. I think we'll bring like dumb, silly nonsense there that maybe has some like weird underlying.
It's still
substance.
A step above some of the other programming, Grace. Now I know you can't say that.
Well, I think the thing that's going to be really interesting is because there's definitely a tone that was cultivated where, you know, Chelsea has a very different comedic sensibility than I do. You know, she's very good at making fun of people, and she's very good at being like pointed and cutting. That's her shtick.
All generously described.
Well, I can't do that, and so it's going to be interesting. A network that is, you know, it focuses on talking about people and putting spotlights on human beings in the entertainment industry. That I just want to. I just want to be silly and stupid. Like, I've realized with my friends Hannah and Mamrie, we say that the most complimentary adjective we've developed is the word stupid. Like, if you say something like, that's so stupid, that goes in our live show. That made the cut. It's great. So but all of it has a layer of, like, it's nice. I can't be mean. And so there is, like, a sense that there is a meanness. There's a cattiness. There's, like, a bitchiness almost to a pop culture network. And so I'm fascinated to see what the fans who are used to that kind of comic sensibility feel about something that I make?
I think it's just what I think they will respond to whatever's funny, whatever they're being offered. I think if mean is being offered to them, then they'll respond to that. But I don't, you know, like I don't think At Midnight's mean. Like we try to.
No,
make
you guys are
fun.
Silly. Like that's the thing is you can have like.
And you're great on the show, by the way. You crush every time you're on our show.
At Midnight's just fun. It's really fun to do. You guys make it very easy to have a fun time. But yeah, it's dumb in the most complimentary way possible.
Yeah,
it's
really
dumb.
I often during the day I go, "That's so fucking stupid," and then I put it in.
Yeah, then you're like, "That means it's great." And so yeah, that's all I want is to watch the show and say that was a really stupid.
And by the
show.
Way, huge shout outs to Hannah Hart and Mamrie Hart, no relation, who are both individually such wonderful and incredibly talented people. Oh my God, they're so fucking funny.
It's Mamrie Hart is maybe the funniest person I've ever been around in my real life. Like, she's super funny on camera, and then off camera, she's probably more funny, which is so rare. And we all have this thing that we say, if one of us is like really hungover, one of us is like feeling like we're not being present in like a social situation or a hangout, we say like, "Oh, I'm watching Mamrie TV right now." Like, I'm literally just watching Mamrie, feeling like I'm watching a television show because she's just on even when she's off.
Yeah, because when you guys did the Camp Dakota panel.
Yeah.
And you obviously you and Hannah were and I hadn't been as familiar with Mamrie's stuff, and she blew it out of the water.
Oh, she's insane. Like, she's so quick, and the funniest thing about her is she's terrified of improv, but her entire life is improvised. And I'm like, how have you never? She's so much more comfortable with sketch comedy and having things written out and having jokes, but she is one of the funniest off-the-cuff people I've ever been around.
And I think that's part of the just sort of taking it back around to creating a community, you mm-hmm. know, is people watching the three of you doing your stuff individually and then coming together and watching you all grow and watching your relationship evolve and watching you guys mature. Like, it, I really understand why people are so excited about it and the stuff that happens to you guys.
Yeah, I mean, it's like what you guys have. You're friends at the end of the day, regardless of whatever professional things you're working on with each other. You enjoy each other's company. And so I think that level of authenticity online is really infectious for people. I love watching people have a great time with each other.
Yeah.
That feels like it's not mean. They're just really genuinely enjoying each other's company. And it just so happened that when Mamrie and Hannah and I all like hung out for the very first time, I was like, this feels very fun and easy and nice. Well, let's continue to do this. And also to be around friends that are super hardworking and super smart and really like taking advantage of this new media situation that we're all involved in, where literally you get what you give from it, is great. It's really great to be around hardworking people. It's like anytime you feel like we literally have kind of like an unspoken pact with each other that if any of us ever complain about our lot in life, like we have the freedom to shit on that person and be like, "You're a fucking bag of dicks. Like, get your perspective in check."
I mean, you can, you know, someone can learn how to deliver jokes, but you can't teach someone to be authentic, you know? And I think that's the quality that I think that's, you know, people will see that in your show. Like, they'll see like, "Oh, this is who Grace is." And this is like when you see a comic that you really like, or you see a performer you really like, you're like, "I don't know, there's just something extra about him." I think it's like, "Oh, well, they're authentic in a way that you're picking up on a very deep level."
Yeah.
On top of the fact that they're also really funny.
Totally. I'm really, really lobbying for E to let me wear sweatpants every episode. Like, I don't want to wear anything that I wouldn't wear in my own house on a Friday night. So we'll see.
It'd be funny if you pitched an episode that was just in some for some reason in your house. Jules Asner is trying to film a Wild On.
Oh my God! No, give me Brooke Burke.
No, but Jules took over that.
I know. Give me the real deal.
You want Brooke Burke's Wild On?
Brooke Burke. Why was she always in Brazil? Every episode she was in Brazil.
Well, Wild On, Brazil.
Carnival is still happening.
Wild on the Fountain at the Grove.
Oh, yeah, God. I wish. Oh, it'd be so good.
And so before we're about to wrap it up, mm-hmm. I wanted to ask Chester about his
oh, my God. Yeah, experience. You guys have a very strong connection because Chester just finished playing Stacey Jacks on Broadway in Rock of Ages.
So I guess I played the first one and you played the last Stacey Jacks.
Oh, yeah. That's
yeah, right. Which is crazy because that was when he was researching it. He goes, hey, do you know Chris Hardwick played Stacey Jacks? I was like, that's fucking bullshit. Nah. And he goes, no, there's one YouTube video of it shot very far away from the stage.
Yeah.
And it's literally you.
Yeah, we posted someone. I got it. It was when the movie came out because we started it with the group of
right,
people.
Yeah, yeah.
And we did it at rock clubs in L.A. for, you know, 05 and 06. And then I couldn't go. I couldn't just pick up and go to New York. They were like, yeah. You can come do it off-Broadway if you want, but we can't really pay you anything extra to do that. And I'm like, I can't quit my jobs and then go not make any money and not have a place to stay. Yeah, and they're great. It was a great group, but it just I couldn't go do it.
They're like, don't you love chafing pants that much that you want to come to New York?
I still have them.
Yeah.
I was going to cover a few of your songs because Dave Gibbs.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to do Beaver Hunt?
Beaver Hunt, yeah. He the tape actually has a collection of songs that you guys...
We wanted to write Arsenal's Greatest Hits, and yeah. We were going to write it for the producers to, like, sell or whatever at the... And there's a... Yeah, because there was a clip of Beaver Hunt in the Broadway version, yeah. I think. But so we wrote Beaver Hunt, I Want Your Cans, which was a ballad. We wrote All I Want for Christmas is to Rock. We wrote... Then there were we came up with as many ridiculous names for other songs like Chocolate Cherry and Uncle Finger and just like all these bad glam metal titles that we never ended up.
Well, the first video I saw actually was because when I read, you know, the first thing I did was
it's the panel.
Was your panel with Tom Cruise? That was.
Oh, because Chester's in love with Tom Cruise. Like,
oh yeah, that freaked the shit. I had no like that was a moment where I was like. Did I die on the way to Comic-Con? And this is a weird, you know, where he starts singing, I wanna know what love, like in front of 7,000 people. I'm like, I think I'm supposed to respond with song. Like, it was the strangest.
I mean, anytime Tom Cruise starts off with, so you and I have something in common.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Oh, I was like, no, we don't. No, I can't think of one thing that we would have in common.
But it is a hilarious show. It's literally, I kept telling him, I'm like, I feel like I'm going to like a Jersey karaoke bar. It's like literally all of Journey's greatest hits. It's
done, yeah.
Completely done. They wrapped in January, mid-January.
Wow.
And yeah, it was really fun. I brought all my parents to see it.
All of your parents?
All my parents. They're divorced and remarried. So
okay,
my steps,
so you do have all the parents.
And my real parents, and they all loved it because it's just so
and then
ridiculous.
All the people that my parents passed up to marry those people?
Yeah.
Brought all
them
too.
My adopted parents. it was great. My Tinder parents.
Oh my God, Tinder parents where you just want like a different mom. Just
like,
meet at a bar and listen to me tell
to
my...
I need to talk to someone about my relationship choices.
Swipe.
Swipe left. She doesn't get it.
So you're coming back on At Midnight soon-ish?
Yeah, whenever you guys invite me back. Bart is always so like
he's cagey.
He's cagey and he's coy about it that I can never tell if I'm doing a good job or not.
I can tell you you're always doing an amazing job. I want you to come on as much as you want to come on.
Didn't do good enough to beat me. I mean, whatever. It's
oh, my God.
No, I know.
Jesus
it's my only
Christ.
Regret.
The internet's like, oh, look at the way she didn't hug Matt. It's like the internet like took a gif of like the... Like thinking that Grace like was like totally fucking rude to me or like
yeah they get very like, they're sensitive
so funny.
They're very very sensitive. 'Cause
at the end we like I you know I win and then I go Grace goes to hug and I go out and then she goes no.
Yeah.
And it was funny. And,
yeah. I did the same exact thing with Hannah on the show.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it was romantically charged with Hannah and I online afterwards.
But with Matt, it was like, Matt, you're fucking walking home from the store.
Look at that slob. He probably gonna call his mom Collect from the studio to walk, get a ride home to his
And she's not going to give it to him because guess what? She doesn't want him there either.
Well, you know who was my guest on the pilot for the show was Tom Lennon.
Oh,
and
Tom Lennon?
Yeah. And
Tom Lennon came on your show?
Yeah.
Tom Lennon's great. Hi, Grace. Just wrote five scripts. Jesus, Tom.
Seriously. He was so sweet. But I had met him for the very first time at the San Diego at Midnight, the Comic-Con at Midnight episode. Yeah. And I was leaving, so I was like in a rush to say goodbye to you. And he was in the hallway, and he was there because he like dropped into the show, I guess. He was wearing a beautiful plaid suit head to toe. I like introduced myself very quickly and then had to leave because Mamrie and I were shooting this travel show, so I had to like go to the airport. And so on the pilot, he was telling me, he's like, my first impression of you is that you were kind of a bitch. Like, you thought you were better than everyone. You're real quiet. I was like, I was so nervous to meet you, and I didn't know you were going to be there. And I literally was like, do I even introduce myself? Does he even want this thrust upon him? This girl is just like, hello, I'm in a frenzied mess and need to leave. And yeah, he was so kind and sweet. And like, we talked for like over an hour. And of course it has to get cut down to like 3 minutes of the episode, but he was hilarious.
Yes, he is the best. Yes, he is the best. And he does have this austere air about him, and he looks like he would have been a colonel in the Royal Navy.
Yeah.
While they were occupying India. Like he looks like
the beauty of Tom is like, he does look like that, and he does sometimes talk like that.
Sure.
But then when you know Tom, he's just this Irish kid from Chicago.
Yeah, he was so nice. Like,
just like super
sweet. I kept thanking him after the pilot for, you know, lending his time. And he literally responded with, why wouldn't I? Yeah. Over and over. And I was like, I will remember this forever.
Well, you were on my pilot. You know, the pilot that I did.
With Kyle.
With Kyle.
Before, high five. That was
before
the best.
At Midnight.
Yeah.
We did that pilot.
That Google Hangout thing that it literally like, here's your room that you're going to be in. They'll be downstairs in the studio. And I was like, what?
Yep. Yep. Because we were trying to make it interactive. And then
this was the first time I met Will Wheaton. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then did his gaming show. Yeah, I loved that pilot.
It was really fun.
I left the studio being like, God damn it, that's a great idea for a show. Motherfuck. Well, I wish I could do that.
Well, you're glad you didn't, because the mall they tested it at in Chicago was like,
no.
What's the internet? How is Reddit work? You know, so we got all these notes back, which is funny now because so much of that populates our show.
Yeah.
But when we did that pilot, even just a few years ago.
Yeah.
That people were like, what? Or like, you know, America, where they tested it, was like, what is Reddit? And
we
so they were confused by it. And that's where they said, hey, we're not going to do this show, but there's this other show called At Midnight if you want to come on and redevelop it. So thank you for at least getting me to that point.
Yeah, what was that called?
Hardwired. It was just a temporary title.
I mean, it's
that's
it
what
makes
he
sense.
Would have been saying had we now been entering season 3 of Hardwired. Duh. It's just a temporary time. We're still working on something better.
All I remember is that there was a Cinnabon and a hot dog or something of the sort was there, and I was like, great use of props, you guys. Really great.
Well, is your show called the Grace Helbig Project?
No, that's a temporary title because it feels too close to the Mindy Project. So
right.
I think it's going to literally be like the Grace Helbig Show. It's
cool.
Up for debate right now, trying to figure all that out. For me, I don't care, really.
Why don't you call it Grace Nancy and just with people?
Hang on.
What? Uh-oh.
Grace Under Fire?
No, that's already... Grace Under Fire Jr.
Yes, yeah, Grace Under Fire Jr. Yeah. It sounds like a rad metal band.
It's called Larry King Live with Grace Helbig. I wish.
Daily Grace once a week on television.
Yeah.
There's not as many.
Perfect. I just wanted the longest title possible. We'll see. Who knows?
Well, Gracie, it's always good to see you, and congratulations.
You too.
And I have no doubt that your show is going to be amazing and huge. And please let me know if there's anything that we can do to.
Yeah. Come be on the show.
Okay.
Done. That's now all the.
Footstep, door, car.
Paperwork.
Did your lawyer get back? Paperwork. He's not there. What? The lawyer's on vacation again? How many vacations did they take? A year later.
Yeah. He made it. The show's been canceled for years.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. He doesn't even exist anymore.
No, and it's called F now.
They jumped it up.
It's just a series of vines.
Someone's gonna do that. Some cable provider's gonna be like, "Hey, you want more money from us to run your channel? Fuck you!" And he's gonna just take his kid. Hey, 13-year-old, what are you looking at? This guy? And they're just gonna put vines on a channel all day long.
I mean, one of my favorite things to watch when I'm really hungover and not feeling well is Vine compilations, like 10 minutes of the best 6-second vines.
Yeah, we used to run those before At Midnight. Remember?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm into it.
I remember I was there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you weren't there. We were running them because you weren't out there yet.
No, but I could see from back. This is too much behind the curtain for people.
Mom, stop fighting.
Enjoy your burrito. The end.
Very powerful.
If you
stuff.
Want more of this, listen to Grace's podcast featuring Chris.
What?
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.